Blog Talk Radio.
Psychiatrist in practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the Director of Inpatient Services at Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older and in the treatment of adults. The word from the womb to the tomb. She's also an all-time triathlete. So if you're having a problem breaking through that next level of sports in any level, give her a call. She can help you through it. You can go find her at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida, or you can call her at area code 813-688-2463. guys, it was another big week, huh?
Yeah, it was a really big week outside the ring. First of all, how's everyone doing? Zito, Butch, how are you guys doing this week?
Doing great. How about yourself?
Doing well, doing well.
Yeah, I'm doing good. Good to be here with you guys.
Great.
You know, I guess the biggest news of the week was one saw Canelo Alvarez bolting Showtime and signing a multi-year deal with HBO.
Yeah.
It's been the big head-turner of the week, obviously. And he's also claiming to want back and to take back the Mexican holidays in May and September from Floyd Mayweather as well. So it's become really interesting.
Well, you know, I was really confused there at first. The thing came out and said he signed with Showtime, and then De La Hoya came out and said, oh, no, uh-uh, no, we're going with HBO.
According to Steven Espinosa of Showtime, a verbal agreement was in place with Oscar De La Hoya securing more Saul Canelo Alvarez fights.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden, Ken Hirschman of HBO, they came out with this big announcement, which surprised everybody because, as we know, Golden Boy had kind of been booted from HBO a few years back, which is why they've been exclusive with Showtime. But the big announcement was made that Canelo has signed this multi-year deal. Oscar said it shouldn't, and he hopes it doesn't affect his relationship with Showtime. Obviously, Steven Espinosa at the moment feels a little differently, specifically because he feels that Oscar didn't keep his word. But either way you look at it, it's a pretty good thing for boxing fans. As we know, Bernard Hopkins is going to be fighting Sergey Kovalev on HBO. So he was the first, you know, Golden Boy fighter to kind of breach that divide and to go from Showtime to fight on HBO. He took that deal. And he was the one, you know, Golden Boy fighter outside of Canelo Alvarez who could mandate that because he was a big enough draw, big enough name. With this being said, with Canelo going to HBO and with HBO doing a lot of business with Top Rank, and again, it just more than opens up that the gates between Top Rank and Golden Boy. What you're seeing is a thawing of the ice in the Cold War.
Yeah, and because Bernard Hopkins basically went to fight Kovalev on HBO, it doesn't make it as big a deal as it could have been. It doesn't seem like Canelo's jumping ship or anything dealing with Golden Boy Promotion. So.
Yeah, I was I just was totally confused on Monday when I saw that on the Fight News, and then Ring Magazine was saying the same thing.
You know what? For HBO, this is a coup. Because
sure.
Your top four draws are, you know, your two top draws are Pacquiao and Mayweather, and you can see the era of both men coming to an end. Outside of that, it's Miguel Cotto. His numbers didn't do particularly well against Sergio Martinez, although they performed well against Delvin Rodriguez on HBO, but his numbers didn't do too well in the pay-per-view. Again, and even Cotto, you know, is now approaching his mid-30s. I believe he's 32, 33. So Canelo Alvarez at 24, 25 years old, I believe he's 24, signing a multi-fight deal with HBO. It's a great move for HBO because what they get is, a pay-per-view star who is also the youngest of the bunch that can draw in that crowd. So it was a very strong move. And also what they got Canelo to agree to as well is that all his fights, unlike Floyd, who's all his fights with his Showtime deal on pay-per-view, not all Canelo's fights will be on HBO. Some of his appearances will be on regular HBO as opposed to just HBO pay-per-view because they want to continue to build the brand. His first fight, a fight that, you know, no one's really interested in necessarily, a fight with Josh Crotty, is already penciled in to be on HBO, so on regular HBO. So, you know, it's a very smart move for Alvarez, very smart move for HBO, and definitively a checkmate kind of move for Oscar De La Hoya.
Sure. Good. And that's something that's going to, he needs at this point between the argument he's having with his former CEO and whether who's right or who's wrong under that thing. And now he's got this big contract that looks like he was right in maybe taking over the business again.
Well, it does seem that now that Schaefer is gone,
right.
Whether it was Schaefer with the impediment or whether Oscar's is because Schaefer is gone, he feels he needs to be more proactive. But whatever the case, it does appear that Golden Boy is branching out and trying to open the doors in boxing. So.
Yeah, Well, you know, and on another big news piece that was out there this week was Mayweather told the Nevada Commission that all access was really staged,
yeah.
Which is what I think we have all come to that conclusion all along.
You know what? That, go ahead, see that, please.
Well, the commission apparently bought it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they said Floyd said that. He said that the marijuana. He told the commission that the marijuana on all access video was fake. Some sort of garden weed, and that the fighting in the quote unquote doghouse, the 13 straight rounds, they actually had several breaks in between, and they didn't do that many rounds, and that it was all just staged to make it look more Hollywood and gritty and more like that, I guess.
And you know what? This is one of those stories where everybody looks bad. No one comes out a winner at all in this story. Showtime did not comment to Floyd Mayweather's claims of all access being staged. I think in this day and age with a lot of these reality shows, we all expect it to be, if not staged somewhat, if not scripted somewhat, we all expect it to be edited to effect. With that said, Floyd, whether he was just trying to cover his own ass, for him to come out and say that the show is staged, to say that episodes are staged or that, it's edited to sell more pay-per-views, what he just did was he shot the credibility of All Access right in the foot. He just destroyed the credibility of the show. Part of the appeal for those that were still appealed by the show, I had kind of grown wary of it because it's a little stale. The part of the appeal of the show was that you were seeing these fighters in their real lives as opposed to their boxing personas. Boxers are like superheroes, but you were seeing these people humanized. Now all of a sudden, if that's fake, then you crush the whole credibility of the show. The other issue is, even if it was fake, why is that the culture that you're trying to portray as an athlete, as a quote-unquote role model? It doesn't look good for Floyd Mayweather at all. It doesn't look great for Showtime. To me, I think what we're starting to see is that the writing's on the wall with Mayweather. And I think in a sense you're starting to see the commission, in Vegas even, getting a little tired of his antics. There was a big story out about how bettors, there's not as much money coming in on his fights. And that's, because most people think he's going to win. But then, lately, a lot of fighters fighting him have been getting the benefit of the doubt on cards. And I just think you're starting to see the writing on the wall. But what happened Tuesday in court was it kind of went under the radar because, fortunately in this instance, boxing news stays somewhat under the radar. But that was really a sad day in boxing. That was really a sad news day. Mm-hmm. That was horrible. That was a horrible event outcome. Horrible.
What do you think?
I agree with Ty totally, but it's just the fact that it's just all of what you want to portray. Mm-hmm. Now, it just seems like, Floyd, as a person who normally seemed to be steady, and even, he had his wild side, he seemed to be steady as far as his goal is money making. But at this moment, he seems to be a little all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
He still seems focused on his fighting game, and that's the most important thing right now. Right now with Floyd. But as Ty said, and the truth is, the end is coming soon. And with him seeming to be all over the place as far as his persona, exactly who he wants to be, who he wants to be with, what he wants to do with himself, I kind of fear for him after boxing. The money's going to be there. I mean, he's going to be set. I can't say for life, just because, people think they're set for life and they end up blowing through millions of dollars and then look back a few years later asking how that happened. But, he should be set for life, but the money can't protect him from himself.
No.
That is so well said, man. That is so well said because it's funny. As you were, you know, stating your point before you got to it, I was thinking, as you know, as you were talking, what it triggered in me was realizing that, you know what, the scene is like a guy who is, you know, he can see that the end is getting close, the writing's on the wall, and it seems like a guy who's having a hard time transitioning from fighter to regular life. It really, you know, it really does seem like a guy who's having that hard time with that impending transition. Kind of like, you know, reminiscent of Mike Tyson when he saw the end coming near. You know what I mean? It's eerie in a similarity. It's very well said, Vito.
Yeah.
Thank you. And just to put it a little more on the point, Floyd is a guy who he likes the limelight.
Yeah.
And after boxing, I mean, there's not going to be as much lime, as much luster on him. And that there, I mean, without that, other athletes tend to try to generate attention after it. And
right.
Usually it's negative attention.
Yeah.
So, you know, just hope for the best with him. You know, hope he gets, you know, everything in line, everything together, knows exactly what he wants. Then, you know, he goes out properly. Not many in boxing do.
Yeah, it would be amazing if he walks away with what he supposedly has made. I think you're right. I think he does not have a business plan, and I'm sure that he's going to have people out there just trying to be his business managers that will take him to the cleaners if he's not careful.
Mayweather Promotion has been co-promoting shows with Oscar De La Hoya for, what, the last 5, 6, 7 fights?
Uh-huh.
And they, with Golden Boy, I should say. And all those shows have been at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. They just now, recently, before this show, got a license to promote fights in Vegas. So it just lets you know a little bit about their business model, a little bit about why there's a shakeup in his team, why he's not happy with Leonard Ellerbe. Again, this is a guy who sees the writing on the wall. And, you know, I think there's a part of him that sees that their moves he has to, you know, make to secure his financial future. But at the same time, like Zito said, it seems like a guy who's having a harder time coping with a dimming spotlight. So,
mm-hmm.
And even financially, I mean, Floyd, his money is strictly off of fight. He's not exactly marketing.
Yep.
He's not, you know, the billboard on advertisement. People are,
nope.
You know, companies aren't putting him as a brand. You have to wonder. I mean, I'm glad he's making these millions of dollars now. But,
when Floyd made his comments in regards to Ray Rice that he had to come backtrack and apologize for, he didn't lose any endorsements. Part of the reason why is because he doesn't have a bunch of endorsements. So even without significant endorsements, and, you know, there was one or two, you know, commercials he's been in recently, but even without significant endorsements, he's the highest paid athlete, you know, in the world today. But, again, that's from him generating fights and, you know, what he makes in the back end of pay-per-views in the South. But, man, once he stops fighting, you know, according to his contract, he's got one more year. You know, is this a guy who's going to have to fight on to try to maintain his lifestyle? Because one thing he lets you know is that he spends money pretty wildly. So.
Yeah, and it's the lifestyle. You said it right there. He's either going to have to maintain the income or he's going to have to unmaintain the lifestyle.
You know, too, I think the other disturbing thing, too, is that you saw the marijuana usage, which he said were, you know, was fake marijuana. But there are two fighters who have come out of his stable, who've come out of Mayweather Boxing Club, who've tested positive in the last year, you know, since February, who tested positive for marijuana, and both Jay Leon Love and Mikey Bay tested positive last year for controlled substances. So, you know, you're saying it's, you know, it's fake marijuana, but at the same time, these are incidences that have happened at your gym. So what kind of culture is really going on in that gym? You know, so, he has a lot to work on, you know, if he wants to be in a better position. So,
yeah, he's always been one to portray the image of a clean bit of health, fit of health.
Right.
You know, he's been one to train, and eat right, you know, well, eat mostly right, but even you see him eating french fries and potato chips, you'll see him run that off almost immediately. So he's the body of the temple kind of guy.
Right.
When as I say, that sends a mixed message as far as, his camp is concerned. Yeah.
You're right. He's always been a body of the temple guy, and that contradicts completely with the stupidity of modern day hip hop culture. And at the time, he's trying to portray both, right, Zeta?
I mean, but then he's going to say, well, that it was fake. So I mean,
right.
How much is he trying to portray real hip hop culture?
Exactly.
Hey guys, we're joined by Dr. Chris.
Hey guys, how are you?
How you doing?
I worked all day and made no money. Damn. My wife didn't pay me. You guys have a problem?
Yep.
What's going on?
Who
are we going to beat up tonight?
Well, we just talked about Floyd Mayweather there. I was just going to ask him about Dennis Ledbetter and his short two-round fight for the WBA cruiser belt.
I didn't see that. Yeah, I read about it. He destroyed the guy.
Yeah. It was nothing. It was almost like the Roy Jones Jr. fight. What was that, 1 minute and 33 seconds?
Yeah, he took the guy out one round. You know what?
For the WBO title, whatever that is, but for the German version, which Roy holds, of the
right.
WBU title. WBU.
Right.
Not sure what that is.
You know, they're paying Roy a bit of pretty good money, and he's getting good crowds to go over to Russia and beat up not even journeymen. So, he's found a way to extend his career and make some good money doing it.
Sure.
He's staying relevant.
Yeah. Great.
I'm going to ask.
Go ahead, Chris.
I'm going outside to sit down and relax.
Okay, there you go.
I'll watch the deer.
How about
Hey, guys, did you say somebody's going to fight Klitschko or somebody's going over to – did he sign?
His fight is against Pulev, which is a real fight.
Oh, that's right.
And
yeah.
It's funny, we'll have Tony Thompson on the line, and he could really break that down because Tony fought Pulev. That was the guy who gave Tony – in fact, he was the only one to beat Tony – not named Klitschko in the last, 14 years. So it'll be interesting to hear, get Tony's thoughts on that fight. But Pulev is a guy like Tony who can present Klitschko some stylistic difficulty.
Mm-hmm. Is Tony on?
No, I'm going to get him on in just a second. I'm just going through getting his number now.
Dr. Chris, I've been thinking about the Bernard Hopkins and the Kovalev fight, and the more I think about it, the more I think that if Bernard's in pretty good shape, which he tends to be, if he's not doesn't turn old, that I think he'll take Kovalev apart. I think Kovalev's just a little too crude for him.
I think he's too young and too strong. As much as I admire Bernard at his age to do what he's done, I think sooner or later it's going to cave in on him. You can't go on fighting these big, light, strong, light heavyweights forever. You know, when you're an aging middleweight, is really what he is. He's never had the body of a light heavy, and I got a feeling this is the one that's going to do it. This guy's young, strong, aggressive, and mean, and I don't think Bernard's got the firepower anymore to take a guy like that out and hold him off.
I remember when Kovalev was fighting Nathan Cleverly, and for most of the fight, well, until,
yeah, I remember that too.
Round,
I remember that very well.
Nathan Cleverly was outboxing Kovalev. I mean, Kovalev was having problems with Cleverly, but he seemed to turn on the juice and started getting a little more aggressive, and he took Cleverly out of there.
Hey, guys, we're joined by world-renowned and always helpful with us, Mr. Tony Thompson. Tony, how you doing?
I'm fine, fellas. Can y'all hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. What's going on?
Yeah, you told me last night you got some special news for us.
I'm sorry?
You told me last night you thought you had some special news for us tonight?
Well, you know, you was asking me who was I fighting next. I was just going to let you guys, you uninformed guys, obviously, know that, you know, I'm about to have a rematch with Solis.
Oh, nice.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Over there?
I'm sorry.
Tony, we were talking about the guy that's going to fight Klitschko. What do you think of him? We understand you fought. Yeah, what do you think of him? You got a chance at all?
Everybody got a chance. We are a bunch of 240-50-pound-plus guys. So,
uh-huh.
A guy that big hits you, you obviously got a chance. Do I think he's going to win? No. No. He doesn't create enough power to make Vlad respect him. And, you know, I mean, he's a good fighter, but he's just a good fighter.
Mm-hmm.
I think
so.
Wade,
you don't think stylistically
he
could
and you know, it's going to take special to beat him. And y'all, I don't think he's special.
Do you think maybe stylistically with Pulev's jab he could pose Vladimir Klitschko any trouble at all?
No.
Wow. Okay.
I know it's heartbreaking, guys. I know y'all tired of Vlad.
No, not at all.
Yeah, but this is not the guy for him, for real. I mean, again, Pulev. Believe me, I hit Pulev with some good shots, so he has a, you know, so-called good chance. But, you know, again, like I said, I believe Vlad is special, one of the all-time greats, and that's what it's going type of fighter it's going to take to beat him. And I just don't think Pulev is on that level. I thought I handled Pulev pretty easy given the circumstances, even though I did not come out with a decision. I thought I beat him. I don't think the things that, you know, he was given in that fight will matter in this fight. Those things are not going to go his way.
Tony, your fight coming up against Solis. Can you tell us some maybe stylistic troubles that he might present to you?
Who? Who is?
Oh, no, you said your upcoming next fight is Solis?
Yes.
Orlando Solis? Can you tell us some stylistic troubles that he might present to you?
Well, I mean, he's a very sound fighter, obviously, with over, you know, anytime you have that many amateur fights in that Cuban system, you know you're a very sound boxer. I mean, you know, very technical, you know, great hand speed for heavyweight, you know. Does a lot of good things very well, real slick, you know, and moves well. So, you know, at my advanced age, I think those things are always going to give me, you know, little problems. But I handled them before, and I'll handle them again.
Good. Hey, Tony, this is Ty. What do you think Solis is going to try to do differently? Because to me, you know, I watched that fight. You handled him, and he didn't fight a bad fight. So what different, or if not different, what improved do you expect to see out of Solis come fight night?
Well, I think, you know, given my loss to Tekum, I think Tekum, you know, kind of put a way out, you know, to fight me. Real aggressive, press to the body, boom, boom, boom. You know, I think that's going to, he's probably going to try to incorporate some of that into his style, which is really going to bring it to my hands because that's not him. He doesn't have a Tekum-sized neck to take those punches I hit Tekum with. Or the strength that can have. So, but I think I'm thinking that's going to try to be his way. Yeah. So. That's what
Tony,
I'm
thinking. Is there anybody out there that you see on the horizon that is going to be able to take Vladimir down?
That's a good one, man. I mean, quite frankly, nobody actually. So, I mean, honestly, you got some guys out there that's capable, you know, like the, you know, yeah. I don't even like to say his name off my mouth, but Deontay Wilder. If we just talking as straight fans, he obviously has a good shot. He's tall. He's athletic. He's powerful. He's punching wise. you know, the young kid out of England that was the Olympic gold medalist. Obviously, he has youth on his side. He has
Anthony Joshua.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, but other than that, I mean, I just don't really see. I like Stavern more than most people like him.
Mm-hmm.
I really like
Stavern. I like him.
You know, the way he carries himself.
I think he's
never panicky under pressure. You know, so I like Stavern, but you know, like I said, the deep bone blast.
Hey guys, am I wrong or did Deontay Wilder? Deontay Wilder was he supposed to fight Laverne?
Yeah, that fight just avoided purse bid actually. So yeah, they'll be making that fight very shortly. Actually, we should be getting a date on that fight actually pretty soon. I would imagine if one hasn't already been set.
That's going to be a good fight. Two guys that'll fight. Klitschko does it. You know, Klitschko's the great clutcher of all times. I mean, he grabs, holds. He's not very anxious to get in there and mix it up. He's very cautious. And, when he's done, you don't miss the – I mean, you don't care if you see a rerun or not. But I think I'd feel different about Laverne and Deontay. He's got a lot more curiosity about it.
Yes, Laverne is definitely a go-get-you type of guy. He's going to come to fight. So is Deontay. Deontay don't take no back seat to nobody, and he's going to swing for the fences every time, so
mm-hmm.
It will be very interesting. You know, I think it will be a real good fight, too. So, and like you said, you know, I think you know, people just want to see action in the heavyweight division. You know, I think, again, I still think, you know, Vlad is special, but like you said, nobody's missing his fights. You know, nobody's clamoring around see him, unless you're over in Germany. Nobody's coming around to see him, you know, pay-per-view numbers, anything like that, because, and to me, this is no knock to Vlad. I mean, he's just perfected his style, and it's not, it's sort of like an Andre Ward, you know, Andre Ward and his greatness, but are you really clamoring to see his style all the time? No, but at least you got to give him his due. They're great.
You know, I grew up with Joe Louis. You know, he was fighting every month, because he needed the money. Frankly, he needed the money. He loved to spend money for Joe, and he used to fight every month because the promoters used to pay you in advance. Then, if you went to a promoter and said, "I want $100,000," which was a lot of money in 1948, he'd give it to you, and then he'd say, "Joe, you got to fight." So Joe would fight, and then he'd say, pay him off, and then he said, "I need another $100,000." And this continued on, the guy loaned the money all the time, and Joe, you know, fought to pay him off. That's how he got into the tax trouble. You know, it was a shame. I thought he should have been forgiven right after the war, and never had that embarrassment, because he was such a good man for the country.
Right.
You know, and the IRS, they don't forgive anybody. They arrest the Pope. You know,
yeah. Right?
They're tough. You know, but I met Joe Louis when he was much, much older. I met him at the pub restaurant in Jersey, and he was by himself having a drink and having something to eat. And I went over. I said, "Joe, 15 years ago, you wouldn't be sitting here by yourself." He said, "Yeah, times have changed." I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I go to the racetracks. And they want me to be seen. I go, I sign an autograph." He said, "The boys at the casino that Sinatra used to go, Caesars, he said, they take care of me. I got a million credit cards." He said, "I got all the money I could spend. I play golf every day." He said, "I'm really leading a great life." He was really happy and satisfied. And I said, "That's great, Joe. Great to hear that." And, you know, they can't get his credit cards. They were all given to him by the casino. They couldn't get out of his income because he had an expense sheet. So, you know, but in those days, the heavyweights fought, you know, all the time, and I kind of miss it. I missed the middleweight division, too.
Right.
Middleweights were fantastic in the 40s and 50s. They had so many great middleweights.
Golden Cyprus, right? The Golden Cyprus. You just have to, got to hold on until the next great crop of fighters come along, and they will. That's been proven in history.
You know, everybody always like to say, well, this era, that era, but then, and then another era pops up right behind it that everybody think was greater than the greatest era. You know, so you just have to sit back and wait till the special guys come. Shit, I'm sitting back and waiting myself, you know.
You know what, guys, I remember distinctly in the early 90s when, you know, the public was talking about Lennox Lewis almost the exact same way they're talking about Vladimir Klitschko today.
Yeah.
And right
then
now,
they didn't appreciate him until he retired.
Exactly. Now everyone considers him like a top 10 all-time heavyweight. And, you know, when he was fighting in his prime, no one considered him anything close to that. So.
Yes. Exactly. And now everybody's like, oh, I wish Lennox Lewis was back. He would clean up every decision. Yada, yada, yada. Shut the hell up. Let's go and enjoy the fighters that we have now. Wait until the next era of greatness comes along and be thankful when it comes along. Be very grateful that you get to witness that. The guys that got to witness the Ali in his prime and Tyson in his prime, and they talked about him instead of sitting back and just honoring those guys and enjoying what they're getting to see, you know, just remember that. The next time the next great one comes along, he proves himself to be worthy, shut the hell up and enjoy what you see.
Great.
You know, Tony, I've been around a long time and seen a lot of great fights, but I'll tell you one I recently enjoyed as much as any of them. That was Algieri and Provotnikov. That was, to me, a great fight. That was a great fight. I just thought that was so, you know, it had everything. I mean, there's plenty of good guys around today to enjoy.
Definitely. Boxing is probably, you know, the top sport in the world. We talk about the world, unless you talk about soccer, maybe. But, I mean, come on. Like you said, man, if you just, first you got to get rid of the American bias that we do carry. We do create American bias and arrogance that we have. You know, was right for the hours for so many years, but it's not. So now you have to, you know, get off that high horse and just enjoy, you know, fighters from all over the country. And when you find yourself doing that, like you said, a guy like Algeria, Provotnikov can thrill you, you know, same as guys from over this side.
Well, and you know what, I would also debate that because, you know, the Berlin Wall coming down and Eastern Europe being opened up. And you know what, also because we have so many different, champions and titles, I think if you were to strip down and take away all those titles and you took it back to just the main divisions, you know, lightweight, welterweight, middleweight, you take away all the split divisions, you take away all the ABC organizations, I think we'd be surprised to find out that the depth in boxing probably is just as good now as it was then, if not better, because of the Eastern Europeans, the depth. The sport itself is not as true and sincere because of, you know, the fractured champions and titleists and things of that nature. But I would almost be willing to bet that the depth of quality fighters, whether you think, you know, the highest quality fighters are as skilled as they were back then, but the depth of high quality fighters, I think, has always been there, but specifically with the advent of the Eastern European fighters.
And one thing I also think is that fighters, I'm going to have to differentiate just fighters back then to today, because not only did they fight more often, as Dr. Chris alluded to, it seems like they were challenged more to where they could afford a loss. So fighters nowadays, if they seem to have a glimpse of talent or hope for promotional causes, they're not going to be steered to the easiest hometown fight, which is the fast money-making type of thing. It's almost like a scheme to where if these same fighters were built up a little more traditionally, a little more with competition, steady increasing competition, well, then you have a shining star. And if you keep doing that, then you're going to have a better quality crop of fighters. And I'm saying it's just straight in the United States. And I think a lot of that starts with the amateurs. The amateurs aren't the same.
Yeah. Well, definitely. I mean, a lot of the guys are given title shots instead of earned. And I think that's one of the biggest things that hurts, you know, the Americans, you know, as a whole, because we sit in the back. That zero pays. You got that zero after your, you know, in your loss column, then you, you know, you're seen more worth than you're worth. You know, you're seen as more than you might be worth. And, you know, as a guy, as opposed, you got four or five losses, but he fights everybody and competes.
So,
yeah, definitely on that aspect. I understand that to the fullest. But, you know, it is what it is. You can't sit back and think about yesteryear. You got to, like I said, you got to enjoy what we have now. So,
yeah, you know, years ago, like I was saying a couple weeks ago, Sugar Ray Robinson was 69-0 before he got a title shot. I mean, he fought to make a living. He had to. You know, you'd fight a 10-rounder here, a 10-rounder there. There was a guy named Marty Sherbo who held the title, and he fought Graziano, and Graziano busted him up pretty good, broke his nose real bad. He was never able to fight again, and Sugar Ray won the box off for it. But those guys fought for a living, like LaMotta said. I fought 175 fights. He said, I fought the toughest guys on earth. He said, and I never made $10 million in my lifetime in all the fights I had. You know, and there's so much money. Where the hell did you ever see a guy with 17 fights fighting for the title? You never saw it before. Now, they're so anxious to put shows on and put these guys on. You know, they're building them up. They're making them, giving them a great one and loss record, and then they, you know, then they fight for millions of dollars with 18 fights. You know, you just didn't have that years ago. And that's why it was so many.
It's good and bad to it because, you know,
everybody wants to put boxing on. You got every Indian casino wants to put a show on. Everywhere there's these casinos, one fighters, and there's not that much available out there that they could support, you know, 10 major TV shows a month, you know, which is what happens. You know, Bethlehem's got a show. This Indian casino's got a show. And they want quality fighters, and they're bringing in imports, really, what you had just said earlier, the European fighters and the Mexican fighters, and the got fighters from around the country are filling in the spots because the money's so good.
But
I had
you know,
a good talk
too
with
some of the European fighters are becoming regional draws, like Kovalev in Atlantic City, which is sold out the StubHub Center in California. So what's happening is, you know, because of the ethnic community, some of these fighters are becoming regional draws in the United States. So,
you no longer have to be real poor to want to be a fighter. They're going after the money. You know, years ago they fought because they were poor. You know, whoever was at the bottom of the economic heap, that's who did all the professional fighting. But now it's lucrative to become a fighter. In 15 fights, you can fight for quite a bit of money. 15, 20 fights, and you know you don't get banged up. And like you said, they build up. A promoter gets you, builds you up. Next thing you know, you're 18-0, and you're going to fight for $1 million. That's a lot of damn money. You know?
Well, I mean, it's good and bad too because you don't. I mean, I don't believe in having 100 fights anyway. So, and you want to make enough money to take care of yourself the rest of life because of the damages that's going box is going to cause. So, you know, it's good and bad to all of it. But you know, I just think they should.
150 fights is too many fights.
Way too many fights.
Jake LaMotta. What people don't know about Jake LaMotta, he was his own manager, and he was very tight with a buck. And the only sparring partner he used most of the time was his brother. And he would go to Detroit and fight these killers. He'd fight Bob Satterfield was the hardest punching heavyweight in the world in the 40s and early 50s. LaMotta would go out to Detroit and fight him and knock him out because Satterfield punch, but he sure in hell could hit. But what I'm saying is that guys had to fight to make a living. I guess that, you know, they didn't make that much per fight in those days.
Yeah.
I know you wouldn't see, you know, today's middleweights sure in hell wouldn't want to fight the hardest punching heavyweight, but he managed himself. He wasn't in with the syndicate at the time, and he did what he had to do to make a living. So, you know, he was his own. He didn't pay a manager a nickel for his whole career. That's hard to believe.
Tony, you did
he was the number one contender for the middleweight division for 8 years in a row. Never got a shot. Brother Graziano used to call him the policeman. You know, every time somebody come up, he say, "You want to fight me? You got to fight Jake first." And
right.
And that's what the hell he did. He didn't turn anybody down. But like I say, I enjoy. I mean, the Zale Graziano fights were thrilling. They were wild and crazy, but I enjoy these fights today. When it's a good match, you know, and it's not a, you know, and it's an evenly matched bout, I enjoy them just as much as I did 40, 50, 60 years ago, you know? So, like you said, Tony, there's plenty of good fighters around today.
Oh, yeah.
I think this I mean, look at this middleweight we got. This middleweight Golovkin, he's I think before his career is over, he's going to be considered one of the greats of all times. And he's going to be up there with the guy from Argentina and the great middleweights, you know. Hell, you could, down the years, Harry, grab you, you could name them all. But I think that this Golovkin, in time, he's going to be the equal of any of those guys. You know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you got a shot at it.
Yeah, you got a shot at it. I never thought I'd see the equal of Sugar Ray as a welterweight, you know, but I've seen it over the years. I've seen some guys who give him a tough time.
Oh, hell yeah. A bunch of guys.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of guys that would have
I'm sorry to cut you short, but I got to get out of here with the kids. We're about to do whatever we were about to do, so about to have our dinner. So
okay.
It was good talking to you guys. Hopefully I get to holler at you when I get back from Germany with this victory.
Excellent. Yes, sir.
Good luck.
We'll be watching for
you. I hope so.
Okay,
good
buddy.
We appreciate everything you do for us.
Okay, man.
Good luck, Tony.
Thanks, man.
Hope the family stays safe.
All right, appreciate it, buddy.
What a terrific guy. Every time we call, hey, Tony's always with his family.
What's the money involved now, like a non-title fight? What do you get as a heavyweight? What's the money now? What do you think it is?
Well, I know he fights overseas because he gets more money. Locally here, non-title fights, they're getting around $30,000, $35,000. I think overseas he gets like $100, $100 and a quarter.
Oh, he'll do better than that over there.
I don't know. He does. Yeah, Tony also holds down a full time job as a TSA agent.
You know, when Anthony Fletcher was fighting and his brother Frankie, Anthony was getting a shot. Fights for Saturday afternoon in them days, a lot of them, if you guys remember. They were fighting in the afternoon. The average payday was $70,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
I know three fights in a row. Frankie Fletcher fought Hard Rod Green. He fought the great light heavyweight, I thought he was. The short, stocky guy with no neck. He gave Evander Holyfield all he wanted.
Dwight Braxton.
That was Dwight Braxton. What a great fighter. Well, he fought his brother. He got $65,000. I mean, that's what they were getting for a Saturday fight.
Mm-hmm.
So why the hell wouldn't he get a hell of a lot more than $100,000 overseas? A heavyweight, I would think they'd do much better than that. I don't know if he'd want to tell you what he got, but
yeah. Well, you know, he promotes himself and. He doesn't have a promoter. It's just he and his wife, and they both work very hard at keeping him working. That's for sure.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Look at the great lightweight. What the hell was his name? And then he wound up fighting Mayweather. Sean Mosley.
Mm-hmm.
His wife was his manager.
Shane Mosley.
I don't know if I could handle that, my wife being my manager. I don't know if I could handle that. I got to listen to her enough without her telling me who I'm going to fight.
She is your manager.
I put her in the ring one night.
Wow.
I don't know. Sugar Shane Mosley. But
yep.
Get a manager, man. I don't know how your wife could. And she was tough, too, man. She called the shots.
Yeah, she was real tough in the court case after they got divorced, too, boy.
She, you know she's going to be a tough one. How much that cost you? I guess, did you follow that along?
No, I didn't.
You know, the worst divorce settlement I ever heard was Freddie Couples, the golfer. He was never married. Common law, he lived with her. She joined a polo club and had polo ponies. And, you know, the judge said, you got to, you're considered married. You got to treat this woman like you did all your life. She's entitled to live the same kind of life she led when she was married to you when you were making big dollars. And
wow.
his settlement was $70,000 a month.
Wow.
He was hoping she would get married again.
Yeah, she would.
And then she died. So they called Freddie. They called him up and said, you know your wife died? He goes, no, I didn't know that. Hell, I bet you his foot was on the oxygen tube, man. You know?
Wow.
$70,000 a month. Watch out, he'd be in there at night stepping on that damn oxygen tube, Rick. I mean, I shouldn't joke like that. But she passed away in her 30s, and that's the only way he got off the hook, or he'd have been giving her 70-some thousand a month. She had polo ponies. She had four or five polo ponies. She lived in Palm Springs, in the highest per capita income area in the United States where she lived. And so I imagine she did pretty good,
mm-hmm.
You know? See, because the golfers, like when a fighter's career is over, do you know who took the IRS to court and won on income averaging? Sugar Ray Robinson.
Really?
Oh, wow.
He said, I'm a fighter. I only fight for 8 to 10 years. He said, I make big money then. The government takes up to 90% of my money, if you know, because the income tax was graduated. And he took the IRS to court while he was supposed to fight Carmen Basilio the first time. And he won. And Carmen was mad because he wanted to fight and he wanted the money. But the rest of the sports world, Sugar Ray Robinson was a hero for what he did, for going to bat with the IRA. And they allowed income averaging after that. Okay, we understand you have a short career. You make all your money in a short period of time. We'll allow you to spread it over a period of time, which was fantastic. So that's why Marciano retired early. He said, my second fight, he said, I took home about 10% of the money. You know, DiMaggio was another one, $100,000. I think he took home next to nothing by the time they got done with it. So,
good.
Sugar Ray was a businessman. He was a hell of a businessman. And he was ahead of his time in a lot of ways. Now he said, I'm not going to fight. I'm going to postpone a fight. I'm not going to fight Basilio until I. You know, to the IRS, here's my case. And they heard it and he won. And all the professional athletes in the world today, in this country anyway, have him to thank for that. I'm sure somebody would have done it since, but he was the first guy. That's in the 50s. I'd say, what, 57 maybe, around there, 56, 57? Because if you guys remember that the tax was graduated up to 92%, That was, you know, and Marciano would make a lot of money on his first fight and nothing on his second one. That's why there's a lot of those guys, once they did get title shots at the fighting, they had a mandatory fight. They had to fight every 6 months if you were a title holder, or they would take the title away from you. That's when the boxing commission had a lot of power. Today these guys, you know, it's so spread out, you know, it doesn't matter anymore. They'll sanction any bout if you give them enough money,
sure.
You know, or they'll postpone, you know, whatever. So,
hey Ty, let me ask you one question about before we're getting close to time here. Arthur Abraham is coming up to defend his title against Paul Smith. He seems to think he's ready. What do you think?
He should be favored to beat Paul Smith. I believe he is, and he should be the favorite going in. Paul Smith is a credible opponent, but he's never been considered world class. He's been considered a good domestic level opponent, as the Brits like to say. So you'd have to favor Abraham going in.
What do you think, Ty or Zeke?
Yeah, I have to agree. But yet, Abraham is not a guy that is hard to figure out, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
He, as long as you basically keep your feet moving and stay out of his straight line of attack, he shouldn't have too much trouble. He's not going to be super aggressive. He's going to stick his jab out there when he can find you. But as I say, as long as you stay out of his straight line of sight, if Smith is up to the task and if he has some of the tools, he could be able to outbox Arthur Abraham.
You know, guys, if I had to pick one guy in the boxing world with the dumbest style of all time, I'd have to pick Abraham. What a dope. He ought to throw all his trainers out and come to America and get a good trainer. Come right to Philly. There's 10 trainers in there that could make him a world beater. Because he with them hands in front of his face, people punch him silly. And when he gets tired punching, he knocks him out. That's a hell of a way to win.
Yeah.
You know? Red Fox came on a Carson show one night, and he said, I just watched the fight last night. And he said, the guy tried to knock the other guy out with his face. Carson said, who are you talking about? He goes, Jerry Quarry. He said, he was trying to knock Frazier out with his face. He said, Frazier almost killed him. And then you saw what happened to Quarry in later years, but this style, peekaboo style, covering your face, you punch you in the ear, they swing around you and sock you right in the damn ear. That doesn't feel too good. You know, on the side of the head, and they move around. I don't know. Like Arthur Abraham, if he fought a guy like Carl Johnson would probably go the whole fight and wouldn't get hit one time, even with a jab. He would move around. Box that guy side to side. He'd move side to side on Abraham. Although I like the guy, he's plenty tough and he does come in. I mean, I like to watch him fight, but I think Christ, I wouldn't want his style. Doesn't hurt. It doesn't feel good to get punched right in the face. and then they come up with them damn uppercuts up the middle, and they catch you on the bottom of the nose, which really hurts. When somebody catches you on the bottom of the nose underneath with an uppercut, it hurts. I mean, it goes right to your eye. That's when you see stars.
Right.
And then, I mean, I'm sure he's a durable, strong, tough guy, but God damn, I'd like to see him change his style. What do you think, guys?
I would like to see him change his style, maybe diversify his offense. I mean, because getting more aggressive. If he's going to sit there with a shield up all of the time, then he's not going to, I mean, win any upper-class fights against upper-class people. He needs to bend at the knees a bit more, maybe bend at the waist, bob and weave a little bit more.
Get his hands moving.
If he stands and all he does is, if you're not straight in front of him, he cannot attack. I mean, or else he's going to attack nothing. And he doesn't move his feet relatively fast, so you can definitely bounce side to side on him. He's just a steady, too steady pressure fighter, and he needs to amp that up a little more.
I heard a funny comment.
In recent years, Abraham has become a little bit more open in the style, become a little bit more offensive minded, a little bit more aggressive, I should say. But at this point in time, Abraham is like 33, 34 years old. He can't teach an old dog new tricks. He is what he is. So.
Yeah, that's a shame. I heard a funny comment years ago. They were doing a boxing show in South Jersey. They had Willie Pep, Giardello, Walcott, Graziano, and Pep. And they were putting some of the fights on. So they put the Graziano fight on, and Willie Pep is a wise guy. He's a riot. And this guy was tattooing Graziano something awful. And Pep says, look at Rocky. He gets mad when he misses him. Everybody started laughing. So Graziano didn't know what to say because Pep is much quicker, much quicker with needles. and Rossi. So then the guy said, well, did you guys ever fight? And Pepper says, no, we were in different weight class. I was a featherweight. He was a middleweight. We you know. And Rocky said, I was too big for him. And one of the other guys said, you would have got a chill from the breeze, Rocky swinging at him. He said, because he would never would have hit Willie, you know. But I thought Abraham should get some reruns of the Willie Pep fights and see what the hell, you know. Jesus, God. I mean, I don't know how a trainer could send this guy in there like that and not change it if he's got some, you know, some boxing a past, you know, some has some fights in his career. He's got to, you know, got to know better than that. But I just, you know, what the hell. So anyway, what's coming up? What's coming up? Anything good in the next couple of weeks? I haven't heard of anything. All I see is football and.
Well, you know, your buddy Dave has a big show coming up in 2 weeks up in Bethlehem with Danny Batchelder. They're doing bare knuckle boxing, and then Russell Peltz has a fight with Stevie Cunningham on the 18th of October, which Russell's supposed to get passes for you guys.
Frank, did you say there's going to be bare knuckle fighting now?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was outlawed years ago.
Dave has been the leading proponent of this. David Feldman. He's got a big program going on at the Bethlehem Casino on the 18th of October with Danny Batchelder being as the head card. And I don't know who else is on there, but there's like seven or eight fights on it.
Is there going to be any bare knuckle fighting?
Yeah, that's all it is, bare knuckle.
Oh, really? Oh, God.
Yeah.
A guy
we tried to get Dave to
night.
Be on here last week and this week, but he doesn't seem to answer his phone.
Mm-hmm. a former fighter told me the other night that bare knuckle fighting is big in New York.
Yeah.
And it's done on the QT. Nobody knows about it. It's not scheduled, not publicized, but huge amounts of money is bet on it. But they want all bigger guys. They're not putting the smaller guys on.
Yeah, right.
That's what I heard.
Now Danny was fighting for a guy, Chaz Weatherspoon, down in New Orleans, and they were going to the casino down there. He's had about, I'll say he's had 10 fights, 10 bare knuckle fights down there, and he is the champ down there.
Great, that's what they used to fight on barges because they'd come arrest you for bare knuckle fighting. Now it's coming back. I guess the quadrangle, if you can elbow a guy in the face while he's on the ground, I guess it's okay to have a fight with bare knuckles. You know. You know, the guy's out on the ground and you're sticking his elbow and smashing his face with your elbow. What the hell? I guess they could bring bare knuckle fighting back.
Sure.
You know?
The way Danny explained it, Danny said that bare knuckle fighting is actually a little more careful than glove fighting because guys don't jump in too much to that. And guys are careful. They try to set their punches up a little more, try to avoid punches a bit more.
Yeah, it makes sense to fight that way, you know. I mean, John L. Sullivan had part of his career was bare-knuckle fighting, then they went to four-ounce gloves, which probably was worse because you can hit harder with four-ounce gloves. You're afraid to break your knuckles.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Picciotti fought for about 6 years, and his hands were broken all the time, and he fought anyway. Mm-hmm. And he used to punch people right on top of the damn head. And it hurts your hand, but I can't imagine bare knuckle fighting. And then, you know, you better be careful. You hit somebody in the forehead, on top of the head, you're going to crack your hand and you're going to get killed.
Yep.
They're going to come back and kill you, you know. So anyway, they stopped that about 19. Oh hell, what during the Jack Johnson era? That's when they stopped bare knuckle fighting. They really stopped it because they were. He was fighting on barges in Galveston, and because you know the police couldn't get out there, and Corbett, Jim Corbett, all of them. They fought bare knuckle, a lot of them, early in their career. But I'd be curious to see that. If it's in Bethlehem, I might take a ride up there and go see it.
Yeah, David. David said he would leave passes for anybody I'd send up to him. So I'll get that on the 18th. We have
see my buddy.
The card is headed by Stevie Cunningham. It's at the 2300, the new 2300 arena down at 2300 South Swanson Street there in Philadelphia. It it has Stevie U.S. Cunningham as the as the main feature, but one of the cards is also going to feature our good friend Edner Cherry versus Jerry Belmontes.
Oh, I remember Jerry Belmontes. Jerry Belmontes, and remember, Zito, we kept saying we remembered him to you, Butch.
Yeah.
Jerry Belmontes is the guy who fought Omar Figueroa recently, and he lost a very hard luck decision. A lot of people thought he beat Figueroa.
Yeah.
He had beaten Figueroa a couple times in the amateurs. And then they fought, I guess, on the undercard. Was it the undercard of the Mayweather pay-per-view, Zito? Maybe. It wasn't the Mayweather pay-per-view. It might have been, maybe it was the Mayweather pay-per-view earlier in the year. But whenever Omar Figueroa fought, he fought Jerry Belmontes and got a very debatable decision against. So, yeah, actually,
I saw
a Jerry
that.
Fight thing.
I saw that fight.
Yeah.
You're right. It was. Figueroa was a good fighter, though.
Yeah.
So Belmonte must be a hell of a fighter if he could give Figueroa a tough evening. He's got to be a pretty good fighter.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. I mean, he's
19-5
KOs, but I thought he beat Figueroa that night. So, I mean, Edner's in with would be a step up in a sense from his last last couple fights. So.
Good. Yeah. Edner, we try to get Edner on for, but he does goes to church on Saturday night and he's another one that's always with his family, but he looks like he's in great shape. I mean, Dan Birmingham has got him, of course, training with Keith Thurman.
When's Keith going to fight again, Frank?
I'm gonna take a pass on that, Chris. I'll have the answer next week because I'll be talking to Dan later on in the week. I'm going to be up there at the gym.
I mean, there's a kid that's anxious to solidify the title, and he hasn't fought since he looked too good his last fight. Nobody's going to want to fight.
That's one of the problems that Dan had said.
He's been dealing with shoulder issues. He had some shoulder surgery, and he's been rehabbing it. But he's slated to fight sometime in November, more than likely, it seems.
Oh, okay. What shoulder did he hurt, the left or the right? What shoulder did he hurt?
That I do not know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know, man. He's got a hell of a left hook to the boy. He's a good body puncher. He's a damn good body puncher.
The guys were up here against their time limit, and so.
Okay.
Chris,
we didn't even talk about the Eagles tonight.
Yeah, I thought of that after Tony got off.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's going
to
be a
stupid guy to come out and say that Chip Kelly's working him too hard. He don't know, but he got a pink slip, and there's one in a drawer for next year when he wins. So when he said that, you're working it too hard, I'm dead at game time. I thought, uh-oh, you just said the wrong thing, boy.
Yeah, for sure.
And then Chip Kelly said, he was just frustrated, you know, and because he hasn't been playing well. He got beat a lot of times, and so Jaworski put on the other night, he put on about 15 plays where he got beat by the receiver. This is what his problem is. If he wasn't getting beat by the receiver, he wouldn't complain about being tired. But I thought, man, you ought to be smarter than that, buddy. You don't go out on television and say that he's where that we have nothing left at game time. We're dead. Everybody's dead. What the hell? I tell you what, the Eagles, they refuse to be beaten.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be interesting.
I just want to know why they are they going to start the games 14 under 14-point underdogs from now on so that they can win? Jesus, it's scared the hell out of me.
You know what? He's coming up with he's trying to make Riley Cooper a guy that runs after he catches the ball because he's so damn big. They're looking for ways to save Sproles and, you know, make him last a full season. And they're in a he's trying different offenses out, and he's doing the right thing, I think. But in the meantime, he's the team's going to level out soon. They're going to stop that. I predict, they're going to stop that. San Francisco's got a lot of problems coming up. They got a lot of problems, so it's nice to catch them when they have problems. But they're a damn good football team, so we'll see what Kelly does against them.
I'm still trying to figure out whether it's the coach or the team, but there's just so many problems out there. It's not just one thing. There's a myriad of problems that they have got to fix.
He's had the most amount of injuries to his offensive line. I mean, it's a catastrophe what's happened to the guy.
Yeah.
You know, you can't lose two or three good offensive linemen, great offensive linemen. You see what happened to the back, LeSean? He couldn't run. He doesn't have good blocking. He didn't make any, you know, nobody opened any holes for him.
Yeah.
Every time he ran up to the line, three guys hit him, for Christ, you know?
Yeah.
And then they're saying, do you think you're in a slump? He got angry when he said that. What a stupid question. You think you're in a slump?
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't want to say nobody's blocking for me, but that's what he probably wanted to say.
Sure.
I get somebody in front to block, make a hole, you can run through it.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell a sports writer you can run through the damn thing and they give you a hole. Yeah. There's no hole there. You ain't not, you know. Did you think that was a cheap shot when that Baker hit Foles?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm surprised he didn't get fined. And
I thought it was more unsportsmanlike. He might have been right. He might have been technically right, but it was unsportsmanlike. You just don't do stuff like that. I was angry, and I am so happy.
One thing you teach your quarterbacks is after an interception, keep your head on the swivel. And I thought it was a good play just because I remember when Mike Vick was playing for the Eagles, he threw an interception, and the guy was running. Mike Vick came and took the guy's legs from under him, made the tackle, and hurt the guy's neck. So, I mean, once, you know, the interception happens, the quarterback is a capable defender. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. It was legal. It was legal, but it wasn't sportsmanlike. You know, he wasn't going to tackle anybody. Hell, the play was – they had ruled the play a pass at the time. But that's still – I wouldn't want to see Joe Montana go out that way. You know what I mean? Or Danny Marino or one of your better quarterbacks. I wouldn't want to see that happen to him because you blindside him, man. You're not even ready for the hit. But he's pretty tough. Got the hell up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think if that big guy hit me like that, I'd call the ambulance, guys.
Yeah.
Get me off the field. Hey, I'll see you next week, guys.
All right, guys. All right. Thanks.
Take it easy, Dr. Chris.
All right. See you, guys. Take it easy.
Take care, Dr.
Bye.
Chris.
Oh, great show, guys. Great show, guys. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate everything you guys do. Ty, you want to leave us out?
Hey, you know, it's been a great show. We definitely want to thank Tony Thompson for coming on. It was a pleasure being on with you, Butch, you, Zito, and Dr. Chris, as usual, the inappropriate one. Bob is our co-pilot, and we'll see you all next week.
See?
I also would like to thank Tony Thompson. It was wonderful having him on, and it's always delightful having Dr. Chris on. I want to thank you guys. It's always good being here. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob, and if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. Butch.
Great. Well, I want to thank Chris being on. He's always hilarious. You guys are always the controllers, the guys who have the in-depth studies. Really makes this thing flow. Tony is just a tremendous person, a tremendous parent. He's always with his children. He's always working. Can't say enough about how good he's been a good friend of our families. Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you for everything you do for us. Our numbers were up again this week, and we can't say enough about that. We really love all our listeners and hope that the program is up to your stuff, and we try to keep it as professional as possible and get as much information out to you as we possibly can. These programs are brought to you in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, introduce your child to them, tell them they are the good guys. A simple thank you goes a world of good for anybody that may be having a bad day. These programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman J.V. Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Kendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Fire Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA, Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Officer Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Highway Patrol Officer Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face until we meet again. May the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hand. Good night.
Shemalek ma'yelama, shemahezahilma, sona shenevoratfet hakuigegen ma'yelma. I'm
1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul. Bob, we love you. We miss you.